not usual in Germany. It's also like it's not allowed because they have to be paid by a very like it's government fund, and to get this government fund, you have to show that professionals are doing this work.
Yeah. I think also that's it's important that it's not just a course that you can like say online go through and like say, like multiple choice that you actually get the hands-on experience, because I think that's a case of just for a lot of sectors, not just if you were looking at gender-based violence, but in everything, that you only get so much from filling out an online course as you do from actually doing the activity or doing the work. And I think it's, I personally do think it's really important that people see the impact gender-based violence has on people, see it in reality rather than it being kind of this taboo topic that's sometimes spoken about, sometimes not spoken about. And then you don't actually ever properly see the impact it's having, not just on the people directly involved, but like, as you said, the people that are indirectly involved as well. The impact it can have on families, the impact it has on children when they're growing up, and then they take those into their later life thinking that's the way it should be, that's all that I've known, and things like that. So I definitely agree. I was curious, obviously you are a visiting researcher over in Canada, and as we've spoken about, Canada and Germany have very different infrastructures and views and ways of dealing with gender-based violence, but have you seen any structural or systemic barriers to women that women are facing when they're seeking help, both in Germany and in Canada? Is it similar, or do you think there is kind of polar different barriers that they experience?
What I saw is, or are a lot of similarities in those barriers, but we do handle them a little bit slightly different in Germany and here. So, for example, in Germany, if you are affected or if you are experiencing domestic violence by, like, your partner, and you want to go to a women's shelter with your kids, then you are rejected if you have kids, especially boys over 14. So that makes the women, it forces women to make a decision between living in a safe environment or staying in this environment, because you have a 14-year-old son maybe, and you don't want to choose between the son and the shelter. So that's a big and really, I'm really disagree with this. that the shelters are doing this. Maybe you have to know something about the history in Germany. Those women shelters and also the counseling offices are grown in the 80s from a feminist grassroots movement. So that was the start. In the 80s, we had a lot of new organizations and social work coming from anti-psychiatric movement, feminist movement, of course. And they established new organizations with specific approaches. And the feminist approach was to deny entry to any person that is a male person. So to youth centers, feminist youth centers, we also rejected, like, if you need someone to paint the walls or to repair something, we were always looking about female workers to do it. And this is the same in those women shelters. So that brings a lot of trouble to the families, to the women with their kids. And that's quite different here. So here, what I learned is every woman can go to the shelters and is protected if she needs it, without discussing what gender their sons their kids have. So that's way better. Another difference is that we don't have, like you have, the transition shelters, and we do not have so much collaborations with the police. That's quite unusual in Germany for social work. We have slightly cooperations with police, but we have a history with getting distant to police and those authorities. So we separate social work from those authorities. So that's a gap. And sometimes if you want to have changes in both systems, you need to close the gap. So that is what we in the association or in the umbrella organization are doing. We are talking to the police on higher levels. So we are trying to develop like guidelines for police. What is a good strategy if they were called that they have to help a woman in danger? What is their action? Do they have to give the woman the advice to go to a council center, or do they inform the council center that there is a woman in danger? So this is growing and developing, but we don't have like police-run counseling or police-run shelters, and I learned that you have it in BC. So this is different, really different.
Yeah, that's interesting, because it's also, you would think that police as an institution, they're kind of your, I don't know how to word it, but like your first port of call if you're experiencing something that is illegal or you're in danger and things like that. And to not have the connection, to not have them working specifically with these women's centers and things to be best approaching something like this. Because I think back to England, of where there's a lot of mistrust in our Met Police, both on a gender level from recently, but also on a race level as well, because there's just so many cases of acting police officers doing something that it makes you wonder how effective are these institutions anymore. I think back to 2021, there was a case of a woman that was kidnapped, raped and murdered by a police officer, and it was like, looking through, there was an inquiry into it, and it said about how this police officer had a whole history of alleged sexual assault allegations on him. And yet he went to and worked in three different police forces across England, and none of it was flagged in a vetting process. And I was like, where are these failures coming into place? Because how can women feel safe to actually go and seek help? Because then it's created another barrier for women to be like, well, I could go and seek help and have something similar happen to me. So how can I seek help in England? So it's an interesting kind of, I'd say, dilemma.
Yeah, and also we had those cases too in Germany. So I think there must be more similarities.
Yeah.
But it's also so very difficult for women sometimes to go to the police, because they are in so much fear and they know that the authorities and their actions are sometimes not that effective. So sometimes they get this, like, the protection order at court, and if the partner, ex-partner, is just ignoring this protection order, then nothing really happens. So if you call the police and say, here is someone that ignores the protection order, then they might come. And probably they say, oh, you're not allowed to be here. Please go away. So that's all what is happening. That was what we were experiencing over the last years. And this is so dangerous for women, because if they get a protection order, then it's really, they are really violated and they are really in danger usually. And if police is not acting like protect her, then we have very dangerous situations. And like the last killings we had in northern Germany were all, the killings were done by men.
Mm.
The last killings we had in northern Germany were done by men who had a protection order and ignored it.
Mm.
So if you get it, then you are in a dangerous situation. And if police is not doing anything, then you won't trust the police and you won't call them maybe. So there are a lot of issues going on in those cases with police. But as I said before, as I mentioned before, as an umbrella organization, we try to solve this problem like in a structural way. So to develop guidelines and things like this. And there were some pretty good processes in northern Germany in the last 5 years. So we developed very, very good, and not too. So we developed a lot of, I think, good guidelines that make sure how the procedure is. One of these guidelines is like a high risk management guideline. So if anyone around a family with violence has the feeling or has the knowledge that this could be really dangerous for the woman, then they have to do like a high risk conference, and everyone must be included, like the police, the social service, the women counseling center, maybe the women shelter, and of course the youth welfare services. And they call it then a high risk case, and they have to decide what they can do right now to protect the woman.
Mm.
So this is new, because now it's an established and ruled way to handle the situations, and we hope that this will save a lot of, this will save women's life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've answered what was going to be my next question, basically, which I was going to say, how do you see the relationship between these kind of more grassroots supports organizations and state institutions like the police evolving to become a more collaborative work environment in order to better support women? Because I think one big issue that we're seeing in gender-based violence is, for example, it's a lot of division and a lot of segregation in regard to some education resources are targeted just to men, some are targeted just to women, when it needs to be all together. Everyone needs to see the same thing and speak to each other about it. Same with the institutions that deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
You need all the institutions working together, all of them speaking about it, all seeing the same thing and seeing other people's perspectives and how to work through it all.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So because we're kind of running a bit short on time, I was wondering of what changes you personally would most like to see in about the next, say, 5-10 years of how domestic violence is addressed within social work and youth services. And this can be like what you want to see specifically in Germany, but it could be also on a global scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, of course, it's always the wish to eliminate
the ideal.
The ideal, yes, of course. But a step to this maybe can be to focus more on the perpetrator. Perpetrator, thank you. One way can be to focus more on the perpetrator. No.
Perpetrator.
That's funny. It's not my word, obviously, so I need to choose another one.
The offender?
Yeah, offender is better. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
So I guess what we need to change is our perspective sometimes, I think we need to focus more on the offenders. In the last decades, we very much were into protecting the victims, what was very necessary and will be, of course, very necessary in the future too. But we lost a little bit the view, what are the offenders doing? How can we get offenders? How can we educate them? How can we handle like boys, men, with this very, very unhealthy view on relationships? So we have the sentence, protect your daughters, yes, but we also have to educate the boys. And I think this is something we must focus on much more. I guess this is not only in Germany, in fact, also maybe in other countries. Also what we would really like is a really full implementation of the very, very inspiring Istanbul Convention, and also to invite more countries to be part of this. Canada was, as I mentioned in the beginning, was involved as a state that observes the process, and so it's allowed to be part of and to ratify the Istanbul Convention too. So I think we need to build more bridges and to learn from each other, from the structural side, also from the intervention and prevention strategies, because we all deal with a very similar problem, and this is abuse, power, and gender inequality that still is a big deal also in countries who have a rhetorical understanding. We are a country that is like, we like diversity, we like equality, but if you see these numbers, then you see that there's a lot of work to do still.
I think as well, like, if you look at the current environment of the rise of management, misogynistic content, the importance of not just protecting your daughters, but educating young boys, of monitoring what they're looking at online, having open conversations about, so you've come across this, let's have a chat about it, let's, what are your opinions on it, how do you feel, and things like that. I had a very interesting conversation yesterday with Simi from the Women's Center here at SFU, talking specifically about manosphere content, and she says that she actually is having now, she opened up the space to be welcoming to people of the male gender, and she said she's had a lot more male people come in now instead of women or gender expansive people, because they're seeing this content and they want to have a chat about it, they want to see what, like, other people are saying, what's the views on it, why is it not okay to have that view and things. So I think it's amazing, like, again, of how progressive it is over here, that they have that facility, and that you actually are having people come up there and being like, oh, I've seen this and I've heard people talk about this, I don't really understand it.
That's amazing.
And have a talk about it, because I think of how little it's spoken about with, like, back home for me with my brother, I don't think it's ever been spoken about in the house, really, which I find interesting, having been over here and talking to people, that the importance is not just protecting the survivors. That it, this is very obviously a very big thing, but it's also educating it to have a level of prevention of it continuing, rather than just keep trying to deal with it once it's happened.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's also, like, sometimes I have the impression in Germany that, like, professionals don't see the involvement of kids in this violence in their families and how they are affected by it. So if they do prevention programs, they don't even think about, is there someone in the class who is affected by this already? They just think about to protect you in your maybe coming relationship. So sometimes it's not seen how complex the situation already is in a classroom.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and also those different vulnerabilities we have, like I talked about intersectionality. Of course, we have a lot of different views we have to discuss and to, yeah, and also to share and to develop specific kinds of prevention for this. But sometimes I think I'm so impressed by young women these days. Like, I'm really addicted to social media. And of course, I know it's algorithm based and blah, blah, blah. But I'm so impressed about how very deeply they are into this discourses about manosphere and about what is my right here as a woman and how do men so often are crossing my boundaries and how they get into a fight mode sometimes. That's impressive. And I also see that there is a huge gap between these young women and young men, some of them, and that this gap is getting bigger and bigger, and that sometimes it seems like there's no bridge possible between these groups. So
yeah,
that's interesting. I think there is a lot of lack of research also about those empowerment rooms in social media on the one hand, or on the one side, and on the other side, those very toxic spaces in social media and the manosphere. That's very interesting, but we don't have a lot of research on this topic in Germany yet.
Yeah, I think as well, because it's so current, it's like it's just happening all like now, and it's interesting that it's can be one platform that has the capacity for two polarizing sides to exist on it.
Yeah.
I find it very interesting thinking about the manosphere, because I've been reading, I think it was recently, something about how algorithms for like manosphere content type thing, they're targeting accounts that have boys' names, and they're looking at seeing if they can find an age on accounts. And so they're specifically going to the young boys because they know how impressionable they are at that age, which is like, it really worried me when I looked at it and read that, and I thought, oh goodness gracious.
Yes, it is. But you also, I think we also must see that it's not only social media, because if they have adult men in their lives which are very good, living healthy relationships, living equal relationships, they are not that vulnerable to follow this toxic environment. So it's not only what they see in social media, it's also how their mindset is built from their real life families and experiences.
No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think that's all we have time for before we start going off into more directions. So thank you so much for coming down and joining me today. I really enjoyed this discussion.
Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Yeah. Renaissance Coffee is open at SFU. Parminder and his team have been serving the SFU community with great coffee for more than 20 years. If you're looking for a wholesome meal, delectable desserts, or something to warm yourself and lift your spirits, Renaissance Cafe is the place to be. Featuring fair trade espresso beverages and brewed coffee. Renaissance Coffee is open Monday to Friday from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Well, how do you get up and go?
The art of the mixtape is not lost. Tune in to the Vancouver Mixtape for your own personal mix of Vancouver's best independent music, interviews, and more. Join me, Jesse, and my co-host Jamie on our trek through Vancouver's underground, Sunday nights at 8 o'clock on CJSF.
And welcome back to
to intravene us here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. And you just listened to my interview with Melanie Gross, who is a professor of social work at a University of Applied Sciences in Kiel, Germany, and is currently a visiting researcher here at SFU in the Department of Gender, Sexuality and Women's Studies, where we were talking about current legal changes in social work in Germany in cases of domestic violence against women, but also talking about the impact it's having on youth welfare services, as well as youth and young people in families affected by violence. So I just want to thank her again for taking the time out of her day to have that conversation with me. It was very interesting to hear what it's like happening in Germany, because I kind of know what's happening in the UK, but then also comparing it to what we're seeing in Canada as well, especially Vancouver. So as we are hitting the end of this hour, I'm going to leave you with a song from the playlist that I found that I really enjoy. And then it will be Democracy Now to take over from 11 a.m. So I have a song called Friend of a Friend by a Victoria artist called 5'9". And it's off of the album Friend of a Friend. So yeah, I hope you all enjoy and have a lovely rest of your day and week.